You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 19 April, Japanese March inflation came out a few hours ago, 2.7%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Studios in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Scott Glow from PSG Old Oak, MTN and Vodacom. I was having a look at those charts yesterday. They are ugly. And then also just banks, but actually financials generally. I mean, Old Mutual, ABSA hitting 52-week lows and 10% odd dividend yields. John Cherry from Cherry Flava, Ellie's failure partly as a result of branding and how they sort of just didn't get right around innovation. And contrasting, I want to ask around ShopRite 6060, who are doing it very well. Thoughts from you, living local but earning foreign currency. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from NPR. Israel launches missile strikes into Iran in response to Tehran's attack on Sunday. Markets hating that. MoneyWeb Nedbank bosses also in $400 million payday, nearly $100 million for departing CEO Mike Brown last year. Note to self, be a banker. Morning markets, US is red, S&P down 0.2%, NASDAQ off 0.6%. Over in the East, Sydney's down 0.6%, Tokyo down 3.3%, Hong Kong off 1.5%, and Tencent down 1%. Commodities mostly green, gold 2,402, Brent 89.57, platinum down at 9.54, and palladium green at 1.33. Rand 19.23, Bitcoin 62,000. Top 40 opening call, red open 740 points to the downside. That is 1.1% lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Scott Glow from PSG Old Oak. Scott, appreciate the early morning time. I said in the intro, I was in Vodacom chart, I mean, well down at five-year lows. MTN chart just looking really, really bleak. And I'm thinking back to, you know, 10 or 15 years ago when these were stalwarts in portfolios. Usually one or the other. Vodacom was for income, MTN was for growth. Both of them, frankly, just under the cosh. Is there value here, or do we look at them at I don't know, utilities with high capex costs?
Good morning. It's a difficult one. It's sort of a trend because you know, Simon, we can talk about banks as well. It's sort of thrown in the same pot. And you could sort of generally look at it internationally as well. When you look at let's call it the global dividend aristocrats, they got a similar trend. If you place that relative against something like, for instance, the MSCI world or the FTSE world, that you've got a general trend that there's sort of growth oriented. But let's focus on MTN and Vodacom, because this is sort of a horror show. I mean, MTN, I mean, back in 2007, you could buy MTN well over 100 rand. I mean, here we're sitting very much, well, let's call it 8 years or 17 years later. I mean, and the share price is trading at $82. I mean, so this is a horror show. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, reasons for that. We know MTN, you know, and the likes of, you know, Vodacom, it's been in an environment where they moved into Africa and that had its challenges, still having its challenges. When you look at MTN, you know, now with the Naira, the foreign exchange, you know, CapEx, all those things. So good reasons for this. I'm not going to go too deeply. We've got only, you know, about a minute or 2 minutes to chat about that. I mean, when you look at the analysts currently, I'm not going to go against them. They got a target price for MTN of 113 rand, you know, at current levels, that's 38% to the upside. Vodacom, 111 and 60 cents, that's 26% on the upside. And what's attracting me is both these companies are trading at forward dividend yields, forward multiples of single figures, you know, 9.6 on MTN and 8.8 on Vodacom. And really, really, this is where I started, really attractive dividend yields. So, you know, I do think, you know, both these companies are, you know, they've got their risks. I mean, when I look at, you know, currently the general consumer in the world is under pressure with the high interest rates. Mm-hmm. So I would definitely tend to go, I think there's still an opportunity. This is a company, both these companies, in actual fact, I do own MTN. I've been sort of lured into, you know, loading up and some more. So yeah, but definitely got its risks.
But I take your point around the Dividend Aristocrats, and it's almost as if, you know, you mentioned consumer under pressure, escalations overnight in the Middle East. There's almost a sense that it's almost all about just gold, and of course, I mean, gold's doing what it does best. And then kind of the growth kind of stocks, those consumer stocks. And I mean, financials and telcos are not, you know, they are consumer. They're not like a grocery, like a ShopRite, but they're still consumer. And generally the world over, the market is saying, nah, unless you're a high growth tech or a gold stock, we're not sure we're interested. And that is cycles that markets go through.
Yeah, no. Undoubtedly, and this is the cycle we're going through now. And I do think that there's sort of a turn in the cycle. You know, currently we've seen, you know, some of these, you know, we had the Magnificent Seven, and then it became the Fab Four, and then the Terrible Twos. I mean, I don't know where we're at now, but I just know that all of these companies are now suddenly under pressure. Maybe, you know, too early to call one swallow summer, but I do think where I would be focusing currently my attention is most probably not the high growth stocks and these Dividend Aristocrats, these value type of stocks.
Yeah, there is good value there. Quick aside though, I mean, mentioning gold, I mean, it's been weird for me personally, never a gold bull, but at this point in time, I have gold and gold stocks in my portfolio. Are you holding gold? Do you have a preferred gold counter?
Oh, man, I love gold. gold is making me old. It's been a bumpy ride. But I mean, recent years, you know, I think we've had COVID, we've had money supply popping up, we've had inflation, we suddenly have talks of stagflation and these general political unrest. You just started off the show saying that gold's trading over $2,400 again. Israel, Iran. I mean, that's not the most important point. I think, you know, the gold miners are looking attractive. You know, from an investment point of view, mm-hmm. I do like it. They are really, really cash flow positive, very little debt. And I think if the gold price stay at these current levels, definitely I would be holding on to my gold counters.
All of them or preferred one?
Oh boy! I mean, we only have got five left on
yeah,
stock exchange. So I mean, there's not a lot to choose from. I do like the bigger two. It's just a sort of safer, Anglo Gold and Gold Fields. Mm-hmm. But for the international, you know, investors, I mean, there's quite a few nice ETFs out there. You know, the Van Eck, Gold Miners, very, very nice one. iShares also got a one. So I wouldn't be too picky.
Yeah, I'm going to take a point. Five gold stocks. I'm old enough to remember when there were 40 gold stocks on our market. Skulklow, PSG Old Oak, appreciate the early morning time. And that's our question today is on LinkedIn and Twitter. There's telcos, Vodacom, MTN, horror-looking charts, great dividend yields, great forward earnings expectations. Is there opportunity here? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise, as hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanley Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with John Cherry from Cherry Flava. John, appreciate the time today. Last week, I went through sort of highlights of Ellie's, although truthfully, a lot of lowlights there as well, but very much just from a listing perspective. You've recently written a piece around it, and you make a really great point that they really had so many sort of leads in a sense. And I'm thinking satellite dishes. I'm thinking the Eskom deal to replace globes. I'm thinking digital set-top boxes. And yet they just kept on blowing it in a sense.
Thanks, Simon. Yeah, so I think that's exactly it. My point that I was trying to make in the Daily Maverick piece was that if you look at the history of Ellie's, it's very clear that they were very good deal makers. Yeah. I think they had a great deal with DStv to provide those set-top boxes. theoretically, it was a good deal with government where they were going to supply those other digital trans, what was the term? DTT, those boxes that were meant to do that digital transformation. So that was potentially a good deal as well. And as you say, I think with Eskom, they also did a great thing there where they replaced old incandescent bulbs with LED bulbs when load shedding first arrived. So I think that was back in 2012. My thinking is, though, that they created so much opportunity, but they just never followed through with any kind of marketing push. And this really is the point, is that a deal is one thing. A deal will always offer you volume in that opportunity. But marketers and companies that are focused on good marketing, they take that opportunity and they start to extract value from it by really building great brands where they can command higher margins. And it's very, very clear that Ellie's were just terrible at doing that.
That was it. It was kind of by the end, I don't know, last couple of years, it's kind of been a sense of, you know what, they sold plugs. And truthfully, plugs are completely generic. They never pushed it. They never took that development of that brand, which is so hugely important, because I think beyond sort of their financial markets, I don't think many folks have comprehension of Ellie's.
Yeah, 100%. And I think I remember going into a builder's warehouse and you would see Ellie's products, but they would kind of be on some random shelf at the back somewhere. And exactly as you said, they kind of competed with all sorts of other nondescript brands in really like a commodity play. And the example for me of somebody who did something differently is Elon Musk and Tesla. What they did was that they took something which was essentially a battery inverter, and they turned that into a brand, the Powerwall. And Elon Musk, kind of taking the playbook directly from Steve Jobs, did one of those presentations in front of an adoring crowd. And he launched a battery. But it had a cool name and it had a cool marketing strategy. You know, you can buy them direct from Tesla and there's a long waiting list. And they're very, very expensive. So I think the margin on those things is huge. And to this day, Tesla's energy component, the actual battery storage part of their business, is by far the most profitable part of their business. Yeah. So it's not like there isn't money in batteries. It's not like there isn't money in renewables or alternative energy. There is. The challenge is that within the category, no one's actually standing up and kind of saying, well, we've got a great brand that we can build internationally. And, you know, I think the shame here is that Ellie's had so many great deals. But you would kind of expect that a country that is so used to being resilient in the face of load shedding and power challenges, we would innovate products and brands that we could then go and export to an international market. Yeah. This is an opportunity that we really should have harnessed to build a massive brand that you can sell. We've got all the experience. So I think that's the crying shame. And in many ways, this is a listed company, but it's also a company that employed people and paid tax. And we should all be outraged because it's an asset that belonged to South Africa, which has been squandered here.
Yeah, I take your point. And I think the Powerwall's a brilliant example of a battery. I mean, that's as commoditized as you get. Someone who is doing it spectacularly well is 60-60, the Checkers 60-60 delivery. And I don't mean from the delivery perspective, which is great, but they now sell scooters for kids. They sell, I think they're even doing uniforms and helmets and that sort of thing. They're building a brand so that they almost become, you know, we don't go and search on the internet, we Google. And it's becoming like, I'm going to order groceries. It's going to be, I'm going to 60-60 them. I might use Dash. I might use ASAP, but they're building that brand and they're doing it with the youngsters as well.
Right. And I think that's a great example of a company where the mindset is right. You know, their mindset is all about innovation. Yes, they've got an app and they're really good at marketing and it's a useful utility. But what they're doing is that they're constantly searching for more and more applications of the way that they think. You know, they're hungry to win. And I think more and more as South African businesses, we seem to almost be afraid of competition. And unfortunately, brands that are second just never make it. You have to dominate. You have to aim to be number one in your category. And that's what Checkers are doing well. You know, that's their intention. And they're killing their competition. And that kind of fighting mentality, I think, is something which really should be adopted by more South African businesses if they're serious about being sustainable into the future.
I get your point on that. And I like the fact that you say it's a fighting mindset. They want to dominate. They don't just want to be number one. They want to be number one by 100 miles. They want to be quantifiably the best. And it's almost, and look at a lot of the listed companies, and I kind of get a sense that the marketing mindset is kind of not built into their DNA. It's something they do. Yes, they in magazines or TV or billboards or whatever, but it's kind of not built into the mindset, but it's so important to really get out there.
Exactly. And I think consumers are not stupid. You know, exactly as you say, a lot of these companies say the right things. So they might have nice statements in their annual reports and they put out a TV ad where they'll, you know, talk about the future and that kind of thing. But we can see which companies are actually customer centric. We can see the ones that are innovating new solutions to the challenges that we face. And I think that's exactly it. I think so many companies are just satisfied with the status quo. You know, they like to stay within their comfort zone. I think going outside of that comfort zone for many of them is risky. Because of that, a lot of the good intended projects or innovative ideas get squashed early. But Checkers 66 is an example where they really took the innovation side and they put it into a different business, being ShopRite X. And because of that, it succeeded. Not that there weren't people trying to kill it. I think there absolutely were. But I think that's how you succeed, is that you take it super seriously, you put some of your balance sheet on the line, and you explore the future. Because if you don't, it's guaranteed that you're going to go out of business. And I think more and more, if you look at the JSE, that's what we're seeing. We're seeing all the legacy businesses just fail over and over and over again. So you've got to take the risk of innovating. It's not a matter of luxury. It's a matter of survival.
Yeah, I like that. You got to take that risk. And that risk means putting some cash on the line. It absolutely does. It also means some things aren't going to work. I'm sure there's stuff that Checkers is lamenting hasn't worked, but we remember what has worked and what grows in that regard. We'll leave it there. John Cherry, Cherry Flava, always appreciate the insights.
Your money knows that reaching new heights means turbulence. But what if you don't have to feel it? Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to a broad range of global strategies. So when you invest in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money can withstand the ups and downs caused by market fluctuations. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Some thoughts on living local but earning foreign. So it's surely one of the dreams, right? You want to live in South Africa. Yes, it's a country full of challenges, but it is a great and beautiful country with awesome people. So we want to live here, but our rand, we want to earn US dollars. Well, maybe you want to live in Bali or Mauritius, or I don't know. You want to live somewhere, but you want to earn US dollars. So, of course, there's all the excitement now around remote work. The pandemic taught us we could live anywhere and work for a dollar-paying company. And that's true. It absolutely is. There are challenges, depending what our skills are. And, of course, everybody wants that. So you're not just competing with someone in your area for the job. You're competing with, well, planet Earth. And that competition gets stiff. But we can think about it and do it different. We can earn rands, invest in the US, and use that US as our income, as our dollar income. We've already got lots of SA exposure. It's our jobs, our home, our car, our Regulation 28 retirement funds. But those discretionary funds, we can focus offshore, and the dividends, the profits that come through, they will ultimately then help us earn dollars. One word of caution, of course, is remember, always have your living expenses for, I don't know, the next year or so in rands. Because, and I know this is hard to believe, but sometimes the rand gets real strong and you don't want to be bringing back money at that point. That's it for today. We're chatting with Chantal Marks from FNB yesterday about Richemont. It has been under some selling pressure, but Chantal's always got the cool head who reminds you that, yes, sometimes Richemont gets well ahead of itself, and yes, sometimes it gets sold off, and mostly these sell-offs are opportunities to buy, certainly not reasons to panic. We asked if you were a buyer at Richemont at current prices. A third said, nope, not for you. You're not a big on luxury. A quarter each said, yep, you're already holding. The rest were saying, absolutely, we're buying more. And then the remainder, the small percentage, would say, you perhaps prefer some others, the LVMHs and the like of the world. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show's brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us an excellent rating in your podcatcher of choice. And we'll chat again Monday. What does treasury function within a company actually do?
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.